Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door.
Hey, Kate again. We wanted to add just a little note to this episode. Literally in the time between recording this episode earlier today and editing before posting, an update on the Bills punter Matt Araiza was released. We're pleased to say that the Buffalo Bills have decided to officially release him, removing him from the team. We still stand by the things that we said about the assault that happened almost a year ago, and that while this young girl did everything right, went to the police, filed a police report, had the rape kit done, all of the things, that this guy is still walking around free. But we're really thankful to the Buffalo Bills and to their management for doing the right thing here. So we just wanted to get that update out there to our listeners. Thank you all again so much for listening and for the support. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I am Lori.
Yay!
And we're back, finally.
It has been a quick minute since you and I have recorded together.
Yeah, I know. You had some really good episodes with Christiana and Patrick. Very good.
Yeah, no, they were good, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, we got a vibe, though, so that's, we got to stick to our vibe.
Must return to the vibe.
This is only take number...
Oh, we lost count. Oh, like, literally recorded 45 minutes worth, and they were like, nope.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But it's okay. We're still podcasters. We're going to, you know,
keep moving forward. Sometimes you got to figure out how to get the flow. I think we've got the flow now.
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah, okay. Definitely. So I guess, you know, the whole thing with us starting over a million times is because we always have a lot of ideas going into, you know, what are we going to do next with the podcast? What's our next episode? What next piece of the story are we going to share? There's always a really fine line between, like, what we can share and what we can't share, right? Like, we're always kind of trying to sidestep this.
We want to do it well.
We want to do it well. Yeah. And so we want to kind of keep our own thoughts and feelings in check, but also, like, we have a lot of thoughts and feelings, and P.S. this is my life and my story and all the things. So we're always kind of trying to navigate that. But a lot of times when we're trying to figure out what we're going to do next and, like, where we're going to head with this, real life things happen and it really narrows it down and really kind of helps us zero in on what we're going to talk about. I can't even tell you how many times that's happened, right? Like, right. Every time we're kind of like, something happens and it's like, oh, okay, perfect. That's our next episode. So today we're going to kind of, tell you about some things that have been happening. And also, you know, along those same lines, talk about this idea of regular people who, are essentially enablers. We've talked about enablers before when we talked about the chapel and specifically naming them and people within that organization who had the power to do things and didn't. But that is across the board. There are enablers in my story and other stories. And so we're going to talk about all of that.
And we are fully acknowledging that there are lots and lots of people out there who are wearing t-shirts and talking about it and having the hard conversations at every opportunity.
Absolutely.
For that, we are so encouraged and grateful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So I guess we'll just jump in to what has happened this week. So last episode with Patrick, my husband Patrick, he talked about my old youth pastor, who is also the man who married us. He kind of, you know, he went through some things that this person had said about me when my brother had tried to launch his own investigation, which we all know how well that goes. Just some really horrific things that he said about me, both from back when I was a kid, literally a kid under his care in youth group, all the way until what's, you know, who I am as an adult.
Which, by the way, can we comment on the fact that this person has had very minimal contact with you in the past 12 years?
Yeah, like none at all. I haven't seen him in probably a decade. So he really doesn't have any idea of what I am like as an adult. So,
And even if he did, to say the things that he said.
Yeah, they're just cruel, honestly. The things that...
Irresponsible.
Yeah, and if you haven't heard them, go back and listen to my episode with Patrick. It's really, it's pretty close to the beginning where he talks about... and he really only pulls out like two or three of the comments that this person made. And there's a lot more where that came from. So just really, really, really hurtful. Really devastating for me to hear, honestly, because I just... He's one of those people that, like, I knew that he failed during my escape attempts, but I had no idea that this was how he saw me. And it's really hurtful.
What would you have expected? So when your brother and sister-in-law went to him mm-hmm. to say, hey, can you tell us, you know, what you know about Kate and her history? What would you have expected a reasonable person to say?
I mean, I think a reasonable person would have been like, you know what? I haven't seen your sister in like probably 10 years. I really care about Kate and Patrick. So I would love to have a conversation with them about what's going on. I'm only hearing kind of one side of the story right now. You know, I know Kate's family, I know Kate's parents, I know you guys. But before I kind of jump into this, I would like to talk to them too, right? I mean, I think that's a really reasonable thing to expect, especially out of someone who is not just a regular person, but a pastor, someone who, you know, has done, like, he did our premarital counseling, you know? I mean, someone who has that much influence in people's lives doesn't have the wherewithal to say, you know what, hang on a second, I'm going to put a pin in this so that I can have the full picture.
And then I'm not just going to say things off the cuff that I know nothing about.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, this is a person who continues to be in roles that he could have influence over whether a person gets help or not.
Yeah. So I guess let's pause on what happened this week and talk about him specifically, because maybe that's important first. So this is a person who we've talked about in our, you know, the escape attempt episodes. This is my high school youth pastor. In high school, if you're kind of catching up with us, I tried several times to get out of the trafficking situation, tried to tell somebody. I was very much in church me mode, but I was very much trying to, I needed the adults in my world to see me. I needed them to see that things were not okay. I was cutting. I was doing a lot of different things that should have been signs. This high school youth pastor is someone who absolutely had the ability to help and didn't. Again, go back and listen to my episode with Patrick as to why he ended up marrying us. But that's who this is, right? This is already someone who has not helped in a situation where he should have helped and could have helped, and instead really blocked me from getting help. So this week, I guess. Okay, so first of all, we're going to give the people we're going to talk about some identifiers, because we know that whenever we talk about different organizations or people and we're not naming names, it gets really complicated. So yeah, that's half of our eight takes of this mm-hmm. episode was that right. It was like, we're saying the word pastor too many times. Mm-hmm. So we're going to call my high school youth pastor Jay, and we're going to call, the pastor of his, church. We're going to call him M. Okay. So Jay happens to be the father-in-law of M, as well as, a member of M's church and a member of the board of that church. So he's actively involved in the local church. Okay. So I guess a few months back, you know, M had emailed Lori and I and asked if we would consider being guests on his podcast.
So that was early April.
Early April. Yeah. A few months. Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's like actually months. Wow.
Really, really long time ago. Yeah.
Doesn't that feel like we were just in April?
Feels like it, but not.
When you were talking about early May and how it was like really busy, I was like, geez, that seems like forever ago, but it like was. Mm-hmm. But it also seems like it just happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
A lot Yikes. Has happened a lot in the intervening happened. Time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyways, back in April, M, the local pastor of this church, asked us to come on his podcast. He said that he, you know, had been listening to my story and then been listening to the podcast and was really feeling the need to kind of have different trainings coming to his church and to raise awareness about sexual abuse in church, et cetera. We responded to his email and said, yeah, we would love to, but we just want to let you know that the high school youth pastor that we've been referring to that didn't help Kate get out of the trafficking situation, we are aware that he is your father-in-law and that he also attends and serves in your church. So full disclosure, we want to be super transparent about that and just let him know, like, we don't want to come on your podcast if that's going to be a problem, basically. So he tells us that's fine, and he suggested some dates in May. Before we can really confirm a date with him, because there was a lot of back and forth of Lori was busy, you know, May is like a crazy month, whatever. Before we can confirm a date to come on his podcast, Patrick, like in a different section of life, asks to be removed from
Jay's mailing list.
Jay's mailing list, right. Kind of goes at him a little bit and basically says, remove us from this list. We will not be, you know, supporting you. We will not be whatever.
How did Jay respond to that?
So he came back. So Jay had already been confronted by Lori in an email, basically saying, like, number one, how dare you say these things? Number two, like, you still have influence over a lot of people's lives. And, like, the fact that this is how you responded to this is problematic. Ghosted us. Like, nothing, right? Crickets. Never heard anything back. Yeah. My father-in-law had also confronted him. Crickets. So now Patrick is confronting him and saying, take us off your mailing list. Like, we heard the things that you said about my wife and, like, bye. And Jay comes back to us and says, how dare you say these things? I can't even, I'm so hurt. I'm so offended that you would, you know, that you would say this, that you would, you know, ask me to take care of your mail. Which, by the way, we aren't off the mailing list. I am still receiving emails, which is like so crappy. Like, seriously, guy. Like, I don't, anyways. Okay. Regain my composure here. Ugh. So Patrick goes back and says, you know, I'm going to send you this transcript of the things that you are that you allegedly said about my wife. Like, tell me this isn't true. Giving him the opportunity to walk it back, to say, listen, that is not how I meant that, or that is not what I said, or anything. Giving him the opportunity to say anything in his defense. And again, crickets, nothing. So it's kind of just like, yeah, okay, bye. So after that happened, Patrick sent the email about the mailing list. All of a sudden, Lori and I get an email from M, who again is Jay's son-in-law and also Jay's pastor. The email says, you can read it because okay. I'm like out of breath.
The email says, I hope you're both well. I reached out to you both a while back concerning the possibility of coming on the podcast to share some of your story and raise awareness of sexual abuse within the church. I'm not sure where your interest is on this, but irregardless, there are some things that have been brought to light that are rather concerning that I'd like to get some clarity on. Last month, my wife messaged Kate privately to express her support. In that message, she shared that the narrative Kate's abuser spread about her being dramatic had been believed and repeated by her parents, namely her mom. Recently, we received word of an email sent to Jay from Patrick stating that he would be pulling his financial support, and in the email, he included this information that my wife shared privately. Before jumping to conclusions, I felt it best to hear directly from you. Is this true? If so, why did he believe it necessary for that information to be shared with Jay?
So, first of all, I just want to say that what his wife shared with me was basically that her parents, Jay and his wife, didn't believe anything, that they had cautioned her not to listen to the podcast because, after all, I lied at Liberty is what they were telling her.
Which is not true.
Which is not true. If you go back and listen to the college years episode, it's not true. But they were basically spinning the same narrative that these people have been spinning for literally decades. And she was telling me that, you know, she was listening to the podcast anyways, and that she, you know, wanted to let me know that. But she shared it, first of all, on social media. So it's not really like a confidential,
like in a private message on yeah. social media. Right?
But I mean, it's not yeah. like, don't tell anybody I said this to you. But even if she had said that, again, that's problematic in that it's really.
Why does that need to be private?
Right. You either support the survivor or you don't support the survivor. You can't middle ground it. Right. You can't say, well, I support you in private, but like, don't tell anyone I support you because that might like,
I don't want to have conflict with my parents about the fact that they're spreading this ridiculous narrative, continuing the narrative that you're overly dramatic. Exactly. I don't want to have conflict with them about that. So how could you put me in that position?
Right. But also PS, I support you. Yay. Right. No,
that is not,
it doesn't make enabling. Sense. It is enabling. Exactly. It's regular people who don't do anything, who don't take a stand. Not really, not in actual life. Secondly, her husband is not only Jay's son-in-law, he's also his pastor. And Jay is actively serving in his church, has influence over people's lives, has influence over young people, you know, on, you know, in different areas going, you know, whatever. He has influence in people's lives. And these are the things that he's saying. This is the narrative he's spreading about a survivor. So again, even M coming to us and saying, I believe you, I support you, even though my father-in-law doesn't. Okay. Except just so you know, your father-in-law is still in your church, serving on your board, doing all these things. What are you going to do about that?
Right.
Again, you can't say, I stand with you, I support you, and then be like, just kidding, when it gets really awkward. Right?
Right. There's been there, that cannot be. And that is how some of this stuff is allowed to go on.
Right.
Because nobody wants to have those hard conversations. Why not?
Right. Exactly. No, exactly. Everybody wants to be, you know, for the survivor. I stand with you. Yes. Thank you so much. And as soon as it gets close to home and as soon as it gets to be, oh, but it's somebody that I know, all of a sudden it's like, bye.
And again, we're not suggesting that Jay is an abuser.
No,
that's not what we're not saying. So just because sometimes we get pushback, like as if it was implied, we are not saying that.
No.
We are, however, saying that he should be now asked to step back from roles of influence mm-hmm. if he is not going to take any ownership for the ridiculously inappropriate comments right. that he made.
Right. Which, by the way, he has not even been confronted by his son-in-law and his pastor, who is the same person. So we're not even talking about like, oh, he confronted him, but then he pushed back and now he's like, they're in the middle of that. Like M has not even confronted Jay about the things that he said. He still
so walk that through. Okay. So the last contact we had directly with M was on May 5th, mm-hmm. which was followed by a conversation between M and Patrick.
Right.
And so while M never directly said on second thought, no, thanks. The last conversation was with conversation with Patrick that basically ended with, okay, thanks for letting me know. I hope Jay has a change of heart and mind. Now, Jay being his father-in-law, the person who sits on his board, who is in leadership in his church. Then there was no follow-up from there.
Right.
Right. So he didn't reach back out to us to say, okay, so what
thanks
are
for
thinking?
Clearing that up. Right. Like, sorry, I sent you a super aggressive email.
Right.
Nothing. Just.
Right.
Just nothing. And so like, that's okay. Like we were kind of like, fine yeah. to just move on because again, yeah, this is not the say all and the end all of any of this. It was like a blip on our radar, honestly.
Right.
You can cut that if you want. But it's true. I mean, honestly, it was
there's
like
so much coming at us, frankly.
Yeah. It was like, yeah, all. That's super cool for you. Like, I'm glad that Patrick was able to clear that up, whatever. So then, Patrick,
just this week.
Yeah. So Patrick and I had our episode, came out last week. Patrick shared some of the things about Jay. He also shared that M, you know, hadn't really, that his response to it was basically just that he hopes that he has a change of heart. And Patrick basically just said that that was kind of a crappy response because, you know, to know these things about someone who's in your church and who sits on your board and not do anything about it, it's just crappy. That's all he said, though. We didn't name the church. We didn't name the pastor. We didn't name Jay. We didn't, none of these things, right? So this week we get a new email again, coming in hot, real aggressive. We get an email from M, you know, basically says that we need to clarify that his church has implemented policies and procedures that we didn't mention, that we failed to mention that his church is doing all of these things and that they've got all of these new trainings that they've done and that they have done all these good things and that, you know, but we never talked about that on the episode, that it was a misrepresentation of him and his church because we didn't also share, you know, oh, by the way, they also implemented some policies and procedures.
Which frankly, we have no idea what they've implemented.
We have no idea. We had no idea. How would we have any idea? We also were never talking about his church. The episode was not about Jay. It wasn't about this church. It wasn't about this pastor. It was merely like a section of Patrick and I talking about what our premarital counseling was like and then what this pastor has said about us. That's it. So it's not our responsibility to say what your church is or isn't doing right or wrong because we were never talking about your church. So.
And also, his other ask was that we clarify that he actually didn't rescind his offer to have us on the podcast, but we just addressed that. Like, he maybe didn't come right out and say, right, on second thought, I don't want you on, but he also didn't follow up after he was bothered by the fact that we shared what his wife said. He didn't come back and say, I still want you on the podcast.
Right.
So, okay.
Right.
But bottom line really is, frankly, this is not about you.
Right. So it's yet another hot, aggressive email coming at us that's like, what? Like, this is not about you. This is not about you.
So, okay, let me just say.
Okay.
Part of what makes me really aggravated is that this person is willing to have a confrontation mm-hmm. with us about things that he is uncomfortable about because we didn't quite do it right. But he specifically said, and I quote, while I have not directly approached Jay about his involvement, we have broadly discussed among our church leadership what we need to do to ensure our church is a safe place for both actual and potential victims. So hold on. You are prepared to confront the survivor mm-hmm. about things that perhaps were not as clear as you wish they were, but you have not gone to this person who is on your board, who is in your family, who serves in your church about these grossly inappropriate things that he said. Why haven't you directly approached him? What right. are you waiting for?
Right.
And if you're not willing to have those hard conversations with a person right there in your midst who you're allegedly close to, all the trainings in the world are not going to solve the problem.
Nope.
Absolutely. Where is your outrage over the things that were said?
But again, it goes back to the point that Patrick and I were making in the last episode. A lot of people say a lot of really nice things. And there are a lot of people who mean those things and who are actively doing those things, wearing the t-shirts, doing the things. But there's a lot of people who say a lot of nice things until it strikes close to home. And then it's like, ooh, yeah, I don't actually want to deal with that. I'm going to walk away. And that is part of the problem because there are too many people like that, that turn a blind eye or get uncomfortable, or they'd rather attack the victim than confront the perpetrator. There's too many people like that who are considered enablers because they do nothing or they do things to actively cover it up.
Or they do things to make the journey harder for the survivor. So here's the tail end of the email from M.
Yeah.
Please consider rescinding these things on your next episode. If you choose not to, that's fine. But if that's the case, we feel compelled to clear them up on our show. This is not to discredit Kate or the podcast. We believe her story. But when facts are misrepresented, they should be corrected. We would rather it come from you than from us. So again, you're willing to focus here to pressure the survivor because you feel that what was represented did not show you in the best light. You're coming hot. You are willing to confront us, but not your father-in-law.
Right.
Why?
Right. Nope. Absolutely.
It makes no sense.
So awesome threat to clear it up yourself, but we are more than happy to clear it up as well. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. So there you go.
Hopefully there you go.
That clears it up for everyone.
That's what happened earlier this week.
There you go.
Another thing that happened earlier this week, right?
Yeah, this week.
Again, along the same lines of all of the enablers, all of the people out there who see things that are wrong. And don't like choose to kind of take that middle ground and allowing a perpetrator to continue doing what he's doing is the whole Matt Ariza thing. If you're local to Western New York, you probably have heard, maybe even if you're not local to Western New York, it's probably beyond Western New York. But definitely.
Okay, so let me just say,
okay,
we understand that we are about to potentially poke Bill's Mafia, which is a very frightening thing.
Yeah.
So please understand, we are not indicting the Bills. We are not indicting anyone. We are just observing some of the pattern here that is consistent with the experience of survivors across the board.
Absolutely.
So yeah. Please don't send us Bills Mafia. Please don't send us like hate mail.
Nobody is saying anything about anything. You know, yay, go Bills, win the Super Bowl, all the things. Please. I don't know.
Please, that'd be fun. We would enjoy right? that.
But, we would, yeah.
However, let's talk about the reality of what is going on with
this individual,
Ariza.
Yeah.
Okay. So what we understand for anybody who's living under a rock and does not know about Matt Araiza, he's been
AKA dubbed me. And
I had to explain all this. And I'm, oh, anyway. Yeah. So, I know Matt Araiza has been dubbed the punt god, and he's currently under contract with the Bills, who released their other punter to keep Matt Araiza. So he was dubbed the punt god because he's got this like amazingly accurate long punt, I guess, if that's even like how that would be described. I don't know.
We are way sporty people.
Clearly, so. We know all the things.
If you've met us, you would like know that.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. Yikes. Very frightening. Okay. Again, in preparation for this episode, I started doing some detailed reading about Matt Araiza and the whole thing. So he has been accused, along with two former teammates from California, of gang raping a then 17-year-old girl at a house party near where their college was in California. So what is relevant for us in terms of this episode particularly is that the report suggests that on July 31st, the victim's lawyer made contact with the Bills' assistant general counsel, Catherine D'Angelo, explaining about the allegations and that there was a criminal investigation underway. And just to highlight, that was before the Bills released Matt Hawk. So the Bills knowing, again, I don't know who knew, right? Again, they're not talking specifically at this point about who in the organization knew what, but we know for sure that the assistant general counsel knew before they released Matt Hawk that there were these allegations against Araiza. So they chose to keep a punter because he was a really good punter, in spite of the fact that this person had these very serious allegations against him, and because he was a good punter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, yeah. So then Sean McDermott's comments, I guess, also highlights this idea that there is no middle ground in this. You can't, you know, whatever.
So I'm going to say that as I read through the things that Sean McDermott said, it was very clear that he was trying really hard to be sensitive to the wounding of the victim, and that he was not unaffected by the allegations.
Yeah.
Right. So it was very clear in what I saw that it matters to him, that he cares.
Yeah.
So that part is good. And also that he chose to bench Araiza for the last preseason game. And, you know, he was saying that he just didn't think it was the right thing to put Araiza on the field at that point, which he's right.
Right.
Like, that absolutely would have been unacceptable. Right. So yay. So
I skipped this part. Let's go back and talk about the fact that, first of all, there is a police report. Mm-hmm. This young woman went through the hell of having a rape kit done. She has journal entries describing the event. She has friends who can corroborate her story who were there. She has on tape his own admission of having a sexual encounter with her when she was underage. So there's a lot of evidence to support that what happened happened. Okay. Again, the question remains as to why he's still walking the streets. But as we all know, law enforcement is not the say all and the end all, and that our system is wildly broken. I just, you know, literally was saying to someone the other day, if a girl like her cannot get justice, then like who really can, right? I mean, she did all the right things.
Can I say the report also, she has said that she waited 5 hours, 17 years old. She waited 5 hours at a police station waiting to be interviewed.
Yeah, that's unacceptable. That's a whole different can of worms that we aren't going to open today, but wait for it. Mm. But yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of evidence to support that this is not a false accusation. As we know, there are not many false accusations out there. And this surely is not one of them. So I guess back to Sean McDermott's comments. Agreed. I think, you know, his heart is truly is in the right place. But again, it's an uneducated statement, what he says.
Because he kept saying is, we are trying to get to the truth.
Yeah. And a lot of people say that we're just trying to get to the truth. We're just trying to get to the bottom of it. But again, if you can read any news article and realize that this girl has a lot of evidence on her side. There's a lot saying that this is true. The truth is out there. She shared her truth. It is true. There's evidence to support that. The fact that law enforcement isn't doing anything about it or isn't doing the right thing about it has nothing to do with whether or not it's true.
And by the way, law enforcement hasn't even finally concluded, right? It's been investigated. It's currently apparently sitting at the prosecutor's office that while they try to decide whether they're going to prosecute.
Right. So the quote from Sean McDermott was this: I can tell you it's my heart that thoughts and prayers go out to the people involved. That includes Matt. That includes both sides here and the victim and anyone involved. Our prayers go out to them. Again, his heart is in the right place for sure. It's not a really well trauma-informed statement. And that's, you know, to be expected, I guess. That's not everybody is trauma-informed. We're just here to say that people need to get more trauma-informed and that statement is not it really, from the perspective of a victim, it's really very hurtful and damaging.
It lumps together. I feel bad for the alleged offender as well as for the victim.
Yeah.
Why are we lumping them together? Right. That's not okay.
Right. Absolutely.
So I think we have to ask ourselves, why are so many people trying to get to the truth when the truth probably is that they really are just having a hard time believing that this horrible thing could possibly be true about this nice young guy, for example, with Matt Ariza. Like, they perceive him as being this great young kid who's got his whole future in front of him. And isn't it great? Wouldn't it be terrible if this amazing future is stolen from him? Like, there's this whole narrative that misses the point that there is also a teenage girl who has now had her future forever changed as a result of these things.
Right.
And so, you know, if these people are not even going to be held accountable in their own world, never mind law enforcement, how is there ever supposed to be progress? We have to stop thinking that law enforcement is the end all and be all. Our very broken system, for some good reasons, requires a very high level of proof for there to be successful prosecution. That is embedded in our Constitution and is meant to be those checks and balances that makes our system one of the best, right? So we just have to, though, understand that and stop thinking that we can just rely on law enforcement to decide how we're supposed to handle these things. Mm-hmm. We have to educate ourselves and care enough to listen and learn. So I told Kate I wasn't going to include this because, I don't know, maybe it's too brainy, but one of the things that Thomas Jefferson said, obviously many, many, many years ago, is that, essentially to paraphrase it, that an educated citizenry is critical to the functioning of our republic. And I feel like he mostly meant in terms of, you know, in order to kind of keep our government on track and blah, blah, blah. But I think that applies here too. You know, if we have to stop thinking that we can be, frankly, fat, dumb, and happy and just along for the ride here. And we have to be willing to just engage in educating ourselves and being willing to see and do the hard things, have the hard conversations.
Right.
Because it's beyond Matt Ariza.
Yep, absolutely. There's countless things in the media right now, things in real life, celebrities, you know, big name people who have done these things, who are, you know, allowed to continue abusing people, who are allowed to continue in these things. And there's a lot of people around them, like, you know, with this, like with Jay and his son-in-law, who have the opportunity to do something, have the opportunity to stand with the victims or to put a stop to abuse that's going on in their knowledge. And they just choose not to.
So I made a list as we were preparing for this episode of just, honestly, it was like a 20-minute experience where I was like trying to pull together what are some of the public stories that are out there. And I specifically tried to look at ones that went on for decades, because when I think about if someone is allowed to go on, if an organization is going to go on for decades doing harm, there, you know that there are many victims in their wake. And by the way, also many enablers, because it cannot go on like that for so long unless with nobody knowing. People know. They know. They either turn away on purpose. We've said it a million times. Either they turn away on purpose because they don't want to deal. It's not their problem. They don't want to get involved, like blah, blah, blah. or they're not informed enough to know what they're looking at, or they're directly involved in covering it up. Mm-hmm. So a couple examples. R. Kelly, again, do the Google search. The judge who presided over the 2021 trial summarized Kelly's actions as having, quote, used his fame and organization to lure young people into abusive sexual relationships, a racketeering enterprise that the government alleged spanned about 25 years. How many victims do you think that represents? And how many enablers? How many people had to be involved in that in order for him to be able to go on doing that for so long?
Yep.
I've been blitzing some of the Bill Cosby stuff this week. And it's disgusting to think about how long this was allowed to go on in spite of so many indicators that this was a problem, starting in, way back to 1969, when he had a whole comedy bit about drugging girls so that they would have sex with him. Mm-hmm. And then it took from 2005, when the first lawsuit was filed against him by Andrea Constand, until then she settled in 2006, the story died. And then 2014, how many years was that, Kate?
Because nine, I mapped it out.
She mapped it.
Not my fingers.
Good job. Very impressive. So 9 years where the women who knew that he was a serial rapist watched him continue to thrive and do his life. And no, even though it came out and people had talked about it, he's still allowed to go on and along his merry way. Oh, and by the way, how emboldened was he, mm-hmm. right? He faced the accusation and nothing happened. And so he just continues on his merry way until some, frankly, not very well-known comic at the time happens to reference Cosby as a rapist in one of his shows that went viral on social media. And now the conversation opens again. More and more women came forward. Finally, in April 2018, Cosby was convicted after a second trial. And all of this, oh, and by the way, he was subsequently released because the conviction was overturned. So he's currently walking free, which is disgusting. All of this in spite of the fact that 63 women came forward and described the same pattern over and over and over again. Again, anybody who is asking, why are Kate's abusers not in jail, or has she contacted law enforcement, or could this be true, when why aren't they in jail? Please pay attention. If 63 women can't get somebody to go to jail and stay in jail, I don't know why we're waiting for law enforcement to have this all figured out.
Well, right. I mean, even the Matt Ariza thing, right? A 17-year-old girl who does all the right things and waits 5 hours in a police station to do the interview and do it right and get the rape kit done and do all the things that they tell you in college, your freshman year, of what to do if you're raped on campus, right? You do all of the things that she did, and we still can't get the prosecutor to get up and do something like that. I mean, who can, right?
Right. Who can? Right. And then, right, let's talk about Hillsong.
Yeah.
Right. Now into the church zone, church domain. Okay. Carl Lentz was accused of sexual abuse and abuse of his power. How long did it take for him to finally be pushed out? Oh, and by the way, talk about complicity. The founder of Hillsong, Brian Houston, is accused of covering up his own father's child sexual abuse from the 1970s.
Decades.
Decades.
Literally decades upon decades.
Yep. And then there's the Southern Baptist Convention. Report issued in May of 2022 confirmed that survivors who came forward alleging they were sexually abused by church leaders, ministers, workers, and volunteers were ignored or silenced by church leadership and often disparaged. Meanwhile, the church kept a secret list of over 700 offenders. This list was kept secret even from most of the church's leaders. The new report was commissioned by the Southern Baptist Convention in response to a series of articles investigating widespread sexual abuse in the church. Not on their own, but yeah, because they had to respond to somebody finally calling them out.
Wait, I want to just pause there for a second and go back to these victims being silenced and disparaged by church leadership. Okay, literally, that is what we just got done talking about with Jay. Instead, like literally ruining, you know, saying horrible things about me as a human being, me as a person, just so that I would stop talking. I mean, it's a pattern, right? It's a pattern that we see over and over and over and over again. Church leaders, making the victims be quiet, making them feel horrible, disparaging them, you know, I mean, all of it. It's a pattern. There is a playbook. Christiana said to me the other day, we keep asking ourselves, is there a playbook? There actually is a playbook. It's out there.
It's befuddling, honestly, yeah, why we continue to act like we're confused or surprised by this. There are so many public stories, mm-hmm, that are in parallel to Kate's experience that it should be a no-brainer, which I understand that for some people, they do get that.
Yeah,
like, there are a lot of people who are like, yeah, right, this is not – anybody who has educated themselves, informed themselves, have watched the videos, read the transcripts, done their homework, they're not surprised by any of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. It's no, absolutely
folks who maybe have an agenda why they don't want to see it, or they're just not doing their due diligence.
Right. No, absolutely.
Then there's Ravi Zacharias, which again, that's another very public, right? Both before and after his death in May of 2020, allegations were put forth by multiple women that Zacharias had engaged in habitual sexual misconduct and or abuse. A woman, Ruth, who is a former member of RZIM, claims that suspicions regarding Zacharias' behavior existed during his lifetime, but that RZIM employees were not allowed to investigate.
Again, people in his world, people on, quote, peripheral, who maybe weren't directly involved in the abuse, but they knew what was going on. They saw the warning signs, they saw the red flags, and they actively chose to do nothing. That is what we're talking about, right? Is the people peripherally who had an opportunity, repeated opportunities to put an end to these horrific things, to make a difference in a victim's life, to offer them safety, to offer them security, to offer them a hand to say, listen, I'm with you, I stand with you in real time, not I secretly stand with you, but I'm never going to say that to anybody. They had those opportunities and they actively chose not to take that path. They actively covered it up, allowed it to continue, hurt the victim, disparage the victim, ruin the reputation. That is literally the pattern here, right?
I don't think we can emphasize enough the damage that is done psychologically,
emotionally. Oh my gosh. Yeah. No. There is no – I don't even know how to explain it in words, honestly. Like, I battle with myself pretty much every day about – is it me, right? Like, am I the problem? And then I read stuff like this and it's like, oh, obviously not, because everybody, every victim out there has the same problem. And then at the end of the day, I still come back to, okay, but is it me? Am I doing it wrong? Did I do it wrong? Did I not file the police report correctly? Did I not do enough things? Did I not tell that hospital worker that I didn't fall down the stairs, that this happened to me, right? Like, did I not do something wrong? But, you know, because that's –
go back to hearing about this girl,
right,
and say she did all the things.
Right.
And still here we are.
And then I hear the things that Jay says and I, mm-hmm, think, yeah, it's me, right? I'm the one that was dramatic. I couldn't get help because something was wrong with me. So yeah, the mental and emotional toll that people like that take on the victim is almost equal to the abuse itself. You know, it really messes with your head a lot.
It does. And it's time for that to stop.
Yeah.
We want to think that we are this developed society that cares for the vulnerable. Certainly the church touts that all the time. Mm-hmm. And just in case anyone's not listening, I am a Christian and I do love Jesus, but I'm sorry, but I'm kind of sick to death of the church.
Yeah. I think that the Christian evangelical church does not necessarily see what's coming. The Catholic Church is well known for the abuses that took place there and for the people that, again, turned a blind eye, had the opportunity to rescue these victims and didn't. Everybody can talk about that, right? Everybody knows about it. It's been widespread. The Christian Evangelical Church is not immune from that. It's just not. Church is a great place for these type of people to seek out, to seek insulation. There are a lot of church people who are doing these horrible things, and it's a really easy place for them to kind of hide out.
And it's both on the macro level and the micro level,
yep,
right? So we have to individually, please invest ourselves in being trauma-informed. There's no excuse. We've said it how many times? There's no excuse for ignorance about how to respond appropriately to an allegation of sexual abuse. There really isn't.
Right.
I understand that there is not a script for it, but there there's plenty of information out there about the response that is victim-centric.
And we know it's not easy. Nobody is saying that having these conversations is easy. Nobody is saying that, you know, having the conversation with his father-in-law is easy. That's not an easy thing to do. But again, if you really are going to take the stance of, I stand with the victim, I support you, I believe you, then those are the conversations that are required. I want to go back to say, you know, you said it before, but that there are so many people that are believing and are supporting. And I have been blown away by that over the last 6 months because of the narrative being what it was. And because of, for decades of my life, feeling like, you know, of course it's just me. I can't get out because I'm doing something wrong, or I'm not believable, or I'm not good enough, or whatever. To now have so much support and so many people saying, yeah, that actually makes total sense. That tracks. Here's, you know, supporting evidence. Here's all these things. And P.S. I believe you and I stand with you is really mind bending to me.
Well, and even honestly, the fact that we had this experience this week of being treated so poorly and we had a place to go with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That there was a voice that could be heard on it. And it wasn't just another church leader beating it down again, right?
And being able to go on as if nothing has happened.
Right. Absolutely.
So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, I guess. Yeah. So the people that really do support us, support me, I believe.
Yes.
It is helpful, and it is turning the tide, I guess, right?
It is. We're all about that. Okay. Well, that's that. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram.
Do you even know what to say right now?
I don't even know. You usually say
Patrick said that we need a sign off, and I feel like, what does that even mean? Like, are we on Anchorman here? Like, you know, stay cool, San Diego.
Okay.
Okay.
There it is. Stay cool, Buffalo.
No. Oh my God. No. Like us on Instagram, Facebook, all of our social media. Check out our website. And the last episode, I said, I guess we'll be back. Patrick's like, what does that even mean? So we will be back.
Here we are.
Stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.